Welcome back to Shedding Starlight, your guide to the Kingdom Hearts mythos. And welcome to our first episode of our second season on Chain of Memories. Re-Chain of Memories is debatably more contained than the first Kingdom Hearts, but it introduces many new characters, and along with them, their goals, abilities, and secrets. We'll explore them over the entirety of the season. Before we get started on discussing the actual story, there are some statements we'd like to make first.
We will be discussing specifically Re-Chain of Memories, the remake included in the HD collections, rather than the original game on the Game Boy Advance. Re-Chain of Memories is a game that people often either skip entirely or resort to watching the cutscenes online due to having trouble with the game's card mechanics. We won't really be covering the mechanics, save for what's relevant to what we want to discuss.
Lastly, we're going to discuss both Sora and Riku's story together. So if you haven't finished Reverse Rebirth, be sure to do so before continuing. As of this episode, let's explore the phantasmic fortress the game takes place in, Castle Oblivion.
Castle Oblivion is a bizarre castle that seems to be placed in the area in between the realms of light and darkness. The jagged and eerie platform it's rested on resembles that of the end of the world, another place in the in-between, as we mentioned during our season on Kingdom Hearts 1. While Castle Oblivion is mostly surrounded by menacing clouds, behind the castle, in the distance, rays of light shine down. Castle Oblivion is also connected to, and may be a part of, the world of grassy fields and narrow paths we discussed in our first season. We purposely brought up this world in our first season to help normalize its traversable connection to Castle Oblivion, as Riku, at the end of his story, leaves Castle Oblivion and journeys through these fields with Mickey as his new companion. And of course, Sora, Donald, and Goofy rest among these fields before they're lured into Castle Oblivion by a hooded Marluxia. And when these three reach the castle and step inside, they almost immediately forget every spell and ability they learned during their first journey. But despite its name, this is not actually due to the castle.
Many people might confuse which influences on Sora's memory are due to the castle, and which are due to Naminé and her abilities. So while we're going to discuss Naminé herself in a future episode, for now, we can clear up which abilities the castle does and doesn't have. Contrary to what Marluxia, the guy with pink hair, teases, Castle Oblivion is not responsible for any manipulation of Sora's memories involving forgetting or misremembering. Riku could traverse the castle's entire basement with his memories intact.
Why me too? No one's messed with my memories.
The many floors of Castle Oblivion have one main ability, to reflect the world of one's memories back at them. We're going to call these worlds card worlds. They aren't exactly fixed recordings of the past, where characters say and do exactly what they did in the first Kingdom Hearts game. Rather, the castle can create entirely new scenarios out of these card worlds. For example, Sora's visit to Hollow Bastion had a brand new story involving only Belle, the Beast, and Maleficent, with no mention of Kairi, the other Princesses of Heart, or Ansem himself. In a meta sense, it seems Chain of Memories wanted to move forward with story elements and not rehash ones from its predecessor. Riku, on the other hand, doesn't meet anyone from these card worlds at all, except for Maleficent and a glimpse of his friends from Destiny Islands. Now, Castle Oblivion works similar to a computer that displays images read from a disk. It can only project these worlds by reading a card that has the memories copied onto it.
While the intricacies of the process are unclear, throughout Sora's story, members of the organization copy samples of his memory onto these cards. Marluxia accomplished this just by passing through Sora. But one can also do it in a fight with him, like Vexen did.
Did you even notice? I was delving deep into your memory as we fought. And here, look what I found. A card crafted from all the memories that are locked in the other side of your heart.
Because the cards are used by the antagonist to sample only Sora and Riku's memories, that's why Castle Oblivion only reflects their past, and not the mysterious pasts of Ansem, any member of the organization, or even Mickey Mouse.
All of the card worlds Sora visits are created from cards that sampled his own memory. However, this isn't the case for Riku. Only some of the worlds he visits seem to be created from his own memory. Diz, pretending to be Ansem, says to Riku about Hollow Bastion, "The things you remember from your time at Maleficent's castle became a card, and that card made this world." And Ansem himself later says that Traverse Town was created from Riku's memory. But one card world that might differ from this is Destiny Islands. It may originate from a card sampled from Sora's memory. Piecing together Sora and Riku's routes, we learned that Axel gave Larxene and Vexen a card of Destiny Islands that he sampled from Sora. With Naminé's powers, they disguised that card as the Riku replica's star-shaped charm, but it returns to its original form when Sora obtains it. Later, Zexion asks Axel for this same data, and uses this card against Riku. So one could argue that Zexion is using Sora's memory sample of Destiny Islands for Riku to explore. This might offer another explanation of how Riku could visit card worlds of all these different Disney worlds he himself possibly never went to during Kingdom Hearts 1, like Atlantica or Wonderland, for example.
Another even stranger example is that of Twilight Town, which is said to be sampled from the other side of Sora's heart. In Riku's route, when Sora would have defeated Marluxia, Mickey says that same card appeared to him.
"That's what let me find you. I guess the card thought its place was to be with you."
While a later game gives a better explanation of how Mickey was able to escape the Realm of Darkness and reach Riku, the best we can discuss right now is only a theory. In the beginning of Kingdom Hearts 1, Mickey was able to communicate with Sora through his dreams of the stained glass platforms. So those two connected somehow. Perhaps the card traced that constellation of connections, reaching Riku via Mickey to help Riku in his journey to overcome the darkness.
In this first episode on Chain of Memories, we discuss how Castle Oblivion, a bizarre castle resting between light and dark, uses cards to project a memory's worlds and denizens, but allows them to play out in ways never seen before, providing new adventures for Sora and a lonely one for Riku.
Castle Oblivion is a labyrinth that reflects our hero's past and challenges them to reflect on themselves. It may not be responsible for the manipulation of Sora's memories, but as Sora and Riku shed their self-doubt and gain new purpose, perhaps Marluxia was right in the end.
"In this place, to find is to lose, and to lose is to find. That is the way in Castle Oblivion."
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Shedding Starlight Discussion, Part Season 2.
Season two!
Incredible. I'm here with Mel. How are you today, Mel?
I'm a little sick, but...
Oh, no!
I know, but honestly, it's the first time I've been sick in a while, so she was due.
Well, don't spread your sickness to me via Discord, please.
Okay.
Don't do it.
I'll clean my microphone when we're done.
Well, amazing. We just did a presentation on Castle Oblivion, and we got some questions on our first episode of Rechain of Memories, and we're excited to dive right in. At the end of our last season, we kind of told everyone to just kind of send whatever questions you have about Chain of Memories in general, and then we would kind of start sorting them, and we got some good questions for that is pertinent to this episode. So we're going to go over a lot of those.
Yes. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I think we're going to continue the trend of saying what our next episode is going to be about. Yeah.
I want it to be, well, we'll just say it later. Yeah. You'll have to find out at the end.
So we'll continue the trend of saying that so people can have, direct questions about that if need be. But yeah, we're going to jump in.
Can I just say before we jump in?
Yes.
I've kind of forgot how much I love this location. It's so weird. It's so mysterious. My stomach is rumbling. I don't know if my mic picked it up. But I love this world. I really love Castle Oblivion. I think it's cool as fuck.
It's so eerie. It's so, like, whiteness of everything.
I feel like I'm in Kim Kardashian's house. It's so weird.
And it's so cool with, like, the white and then the people in it are all wearing black. And it's, like,
literally, cool I was thinking the same thing. I love it.
It's
I love it.
Almost as if that's probably intentional. Yeah, it's so, like, just its design in general on the inside and outside is so, like, I don't even know what word I'm trying to think of. I don't know what vibe I'm trying to think of. It's so, like, so different on the outside. Like, it's the darkness. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, the sideways buildings kind
of
it reminds me of, like, I don't, unfortunately, maybe I'm the only one who thinks this, but I feel like Kingdom Hearts today is kind of slowly gravitating away from, like, for example, Castle Oblivion feels almost like cartoonish in the way that it looks from the outside, because it's just so ridiculous. Like, buildings and wings that are sideways and upside down.
Yeah. Like, it's just, it's very Toontown.
It's very Toontown! It's so Toontown. And I think that it's just such a good way to represent what a weird and confusing and maze-like building it is.
Yeah. With floors that can turn into other worlds depending on what you remember.
Yeah, you think the outside is crazy, girl. Wait till you see the inside.
Yeah, but, like, just the contrast of A, the white walls of the inside, and then the contrast of the people in it, and then the contrast from the inside to the outside of just these weird colors and it being placed in a just a dark, weird place.
It's the weirdest fucking location.
It's weird.
For a castle ever.
Yeah. It's crazy. And, yeah. And then you go in and you forget everything you know.
You know what? That's true to real life, though. I step through a door and I just forget what I'm doing.
I open my phone to look up something and I forget what I'm doing as soon as I unlock my screen.
Nominee!
She's in my head. Okay, so I think the first topic we're going to talk about, my first question was about the relationship of the cards to the castle. And I think a lot of other people are wondering this about this as well. I, like, as I was kind of reading through it, like, a lot of people asked us if the cards are real or if they're like a gameplay mechanic. And so I guess my question was, like, are the cards inherently tied to the castle? And if they are, in what ways? And then I was just kind of writing out my thought process here, but, like, I guess they are inherently tied to the castle in that the castle can project them, but would they have any use outside of this castle? And I'm kind of, like, this kind of led me to imagine these cards as if they are, like, a ticket to ride, a theme park ride. Like, you have the Traverse Town card, you put it in the machine, and it projects Traverse Town to you. So that's kind of how I think of them now.
I was thinking when writing this script about how, so Castle Oblivion overall, we learn more about its backstory in the future, but mm-hmm. it's such a weird and mysterious castle still that part of me wonders if, like, if you're right, if there is a reason that these cards can read your memories and then project the world you remember. Like, part of, like, I was mm-hmm. wondering, like, what if the person who, like, used to live here or the people who used to live here, if they, like, took advantage of memories to, like, learn more yeah. about the world they were once in or something. Because it's like, because Castle, what weirds me out so much, or I guess intrigues me is more accurate to say, about Castle Oblivion is that it doesn't show you your memories exactly how you remember them. Because yeah. in all of these little Disney worlds that Sora goes through, the stories are different. It's the same people, but the stories are different. So what would be yeah. the point of that? And it's just such an interesting, like, before the organization came here, what was the point of this castle? I just think yeah. it's so interesting, especially
who
with
who built
the
this
cards.
Damn castle?
Who fucking Why? Built it? Who built it? Kim, where's your hammer? Kim.
Yeah, that just makes me think, like, whoever did wanted to, like, study memory and what yeah. they do with it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, this is just a whole investigation into that, this whole game. We told you memory was gonna be important. We told you last season. So I hope you listened, and I hope you're along for the ride, because that's what this whole game is. It's about memory. It's called Chain of Memories, so, like, I would think so.
I hope you have your deck of cards ready to use.
So, to kind of tack on to this, Adrian sent in another question. Thank you, Adrian, for your question. They asked, do you think the world cards are a part of the castle or something the organization introduced? If the cards are a part of the castle and needed, if the cards are a part of the castle and needed to travel the floors, how would someone navigate the castle without the organization or Diz creating the cards? Yeah. So me, just with, you know, the knowledge I have of these games, I think the answer to that would be the portals of darkness that the organization members travel through, which are called the corridors of darkness. They are pretty widely used throughout yeah. this series. And yeah, I think they just travel, you know, through those corridors, which the point that you brought is that, you know, that's eventually how maybe Mickey was able to reach Riku.
Mm, yeah. So if you're yeah. if you're listening and you're new and you're like, wait, what? So, like, anytime an organization member appears to Sora and then you kick their ass and then they disappear and they get yeah. covered in black smoke and they, like, evaporate or whatever, they're yeah. using a corridor of darkness. It doesn't yeah. really look like it, but they're technically walking through a black portal. Is yeah. what's happening. And, yeah. and it teleports them somewhere else. And that's why they're able to kind of go through this whole castle without unlocking doors with cards like Sora has to.
Yeah.
And Riku. So.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
And like you said, because we got an email. Did I even write it down? Or did I just leave it in the world of email? Yes! Yeah. Okay, so the Couch Kids. The Couch Kids emailed that. So it's Andrew and the Couch Kids. Okay, so Andrew wrote, I still don't fully understand why the card appears to Mickey in the Realm of Darkness. When he gives it to Riku, he says it was meant to give it to him. I know Riku ends up at Castle Oblivion because he's connected to Sora, but Mickey's appearance seems related to the Twilight Town card. So we talked about this in the presentation. And in the presentation itself, I avoided discussing Corridors of Darkness because at that point in time that I was writing, I wasn't sure if it was something I wanted to talk about. But the even though it's weird that the card did reach out to Mickey and kind of led Mickey to Riku, Mickey was able to leave being trapped in the Realm of Darkness, he was able to reach Castle Oblivion and Riku through a corridor of darkness. And the way Mickey kind of describes it, I guess you can kind of see it from his point of view, even though he didn't seem to really know what was happening. Mickey was like, I saw you when I followed you here and I found you thanks to this card. So I think that the game doesn't really say it, but I think it's safe to say Mickey and Riku were able to use corridors of darkness to reach Castle Oblivion.
Right. Which I might be jumping a little bit with this connection, but I feel like that ties a little bit to... This brings me to a point that Ryan Flynn brought up in their email that was a thought that I also had, is how the fuck did they just walk to Castle Oblivion, Sora and the Trinity Trio? Because, like, it's like we talked about it being in the one of the in-between spaces, mm-hmm. but it's obviously a new world that we're going to.
Yeah.
So, like, no one, the exact thing that Ryan Flynn says is, I still don't get how the Trinity just walked from the end of the world to Castle Oblivion. What's with that? Nobody else ever just walks to another world like that. And I agree.
God, I love you, Flynn. How did I get there? I love you, Flynn. Okay, so I would say that when Sora restored all the worlds. You remember when Kairi's on Destiny Islands and you see all the stars shooting back and then Destiny Islands yeah. pops back into life? Those are uh-huh. all the worlds being restored, right? And because right. all the worlds are being restored, the end of the world itself is like ceasing existence because it's a graveyard for all the worlds in their ruins. So
right.
if all okay. of them become restored, it doesn't really exist anymore. It's like all the crumbs returning back to their original place. Yeah. So I would say that Sora, Donald, and Goofy didn't walk from the end of the world to this field place. I would say they kind of got, like, casted, like, washed gotcha. Up on shore onto that
They green, caught a ride.
Yeah, yeah. onto yeah. that field, crossroads, plains kind of place. And then gotcha. From there, they walked to Castle Oblivion. And, like, you know, it is very weird that such a peaceful-looking meadow can slowly turn into such a creepy, ooky-spooky-looking place.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
it's that one Yu-Gi-Oh card. Hold on. It's the pathway one.
What?
Hold on.
Where's Danny? I can't believe you're bringing up Yu-Gi-Oh.
I figured out that this meme started as a Yu-Gi-Oh card. And so you've oh! definitely seen it. The dramatic crossroads card. This okay, one. yes, it's literally that.
It is dramatic crossroads. I can't believe you remembered that. That is crazy. Oh, Yu-Gi-Oh. How can Yu-Gi-Oh cards sometimes look so good and yet sometimes look so bad? At least
it looked like this.
At least the Castle Oblivion cards are consistent, okay? yeah. But yeah, honestly, yeah. That's what it fucking looks like. Like, I don't know what to tell you, but it's literally canon in the game that, like, okay, so if you're having a hard time wrapping your head around the idea of, like, this really pretty meadow place, I would say it's kind of like, this is gonna be so stupid, I would say it's kind of like The Lion King and how you have this beautiful Pride Rock. But then yeah. the more you walk, you end up slowly getting into that elephant graveyard, which is super creepy and shadowy uh-huh. and, like, light never touches there or something. I don't remember. Or, like, yeah. Mordor, you know? Like, you can live yeah. in the Shire, but if you keep walking, you're going to get yeah. to that ooky spooky place.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel like Castle Oblivion is, personally.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Like, not everywhere is the same. Yeah,
this isn't
else,
so. Star Wars planets, where once you've seen one part of the planet, you've seen it all.
Seen it all, yeah. your metaphors are the best. They really help.
Thank you. Like, I'm glad. I'm really glad to hear that.
Like, I genuinely, like, the metaphors help me, like, conceptualize most of this stuff in the easiest way. So keep them coming, please, okay. because I need them. And that's what I was trying to do with the theme park thing, is like...
Yeah, totally.
Kind of visualize it in a different way.
I can see that. Especially because now that theme parks are so digital and relying on screens, like, you insert the card and you get the fucking world around you. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool. So I wanted to say, kind of rewinding back to the Twilight Town card. Another thing that might be kind of weird is, like, the idea of, like, a card reaching out to a person, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if, like, that's a common thing in, like... Well, actually, no, yeah. Okay, so I was gonna say, I don't know if it's a common thing in, like, Japanese video games, and that's why they're able to just kind of, like, take it as it is. But, like, yeah, we've talked before about how Kingdom Hearts is seen kind of differently when you're familiar with Japanese folklore, and in Japanese folklore, objects do kind of have, like, a life within them.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like that's something we kind of get a lot in Western media. Like, I'm trying to think of even, like, kids shows, like, I don't know, the salt and pepper from Blue's Clues.
The Brave Little Toaster, Mel.
The Brave Little Toaster. Oh, brother. So, but in Kingdom Hearts itself, the more you adapt to the idea that cards, it's almost like, maybe other fans would disagree with this, but I would almost say that, like, objects themselves don't have their own souls and lives, but that when we love an object or interact with an object, we leave a part of ourselves with it. And that is what kind of connects it to other people and the ones that we love. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, I don't really, like, you know, Mickey and Sora only spoke, like, maybe once when they're trying to close the door to darkness.
Right.
But I still think even that, along with the dreams that Sora had in the beginning of Kingdom Hearts, is enough to, like, bridge the two of them and have that card be like, okay, I need to reach Riku right now. What's the closest thing I can do that? This little mouse? Okay, he's my way in, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Interesting. No, that makes me think all that objects coming to life is reminding me of, like, I don't know if it's a Tumblr quote or what, but it's like, to be loved is to be changed, or to be changed is to be loved. It's just cute.
That is cute. I never heard of that. And I'm a good old-fashioned Tumblrina or whatever people say.
It might not have been Tumblr, I don't remember, but it's a cute concept to think of, especially with, like, the whole idea in Kingdom Hearts 1 of the Keyblade chose the key bearer.
Oh, so true, bestie.
Yes. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, they established in this first game about objects, at least, you know, this so important object that, you know, is gonna save the world.
Yeah, that's such a good point, because I was trying to think of something in Kingdom Hearts 1, where I was like, an object, think of an object, think of anything.
The object, Mel, the object.
Well, shit. Okay, so I wrote how... Hannah, I love Riku. I do. Okay, so...
I do too!
I wrote how Sora, the lucky dog, the happy-go... Well, actually, he isn't so happy-go-lucky in this game. He actually is kind of a bit of a temper in this game. But usually... Our happy-go-lucky guy is so lucky because he always has such fun adventures, and then he gets to revisit his memories and have even brand new fun, stupid, silly adventures. Mm-hmm. And poor Riku, in the basement of this castle, fighting for his damn life. Like, okay, so if you are kind of like me, and Hannah, but I don't want to speak for Hannah, where... You mainly watch the cutscenes of Chain of Memories on YouTube rather than play the game yourself. You might not realize that in Riku's route, Riku doesn't get to have any of those Disney adventures. He just kind of... It's so eerie. So Riku gets to explore all these different Disney worlds, but there's, like, no fucking cutscenes. So it's like, you enter a room, you fight Captain Hook, no context, you whoop his ass, and then you leave. And it's there's... And so, I think it does such a good job to me of really expressing how lonely and how alone Riku is. And so at one point in Chain of Memories, when Mickey finally arrives and finally reaches him, Riku literally just, like, collapses from relief of not being alone anymore. Like, damn.
It's like, it's good to see that side of him after, I feel like a lot of people, especially, like, I'll mention Jimmy's playthrough of Kingdom Hearts 1. People, when they first play Kingdom Hearts 1, like, Riku's a bitch. Like, Riku is mean. He, you know, is manipulating Sora and steals his friends and, like, all this stuff. So I am so glad that we get to see a more, like, a different side to Riku here.
There's something about Chain of Memories that I think because it's all in one location. And I think a lot of people may not like Chain of Memories because it seems repetitive. But in a way, I feel like that is so realistic to real life. Because for me, when I'm working through shit and when I'm working through problems, it feels repetitive. Like, I have to face it over and over and over and over until I lose my fucking mind. And then I break down and then I grow, you know? That's life. And that's what I think Chain of Memories does really well.
Yeah. And I wrote here on this script about Riku having a lonely journey. I just watched, if you've seen the Last Meal series on YouTube by Mythical Kitchen, I just watched the Tom Hanks one. And he says, during that interview, he says the best stories are about loneliness, which is funny because, like, that makes me think of the Tom Hanks movie Castaway. You know, that's the most lonely a person can fucking be when you start talking to a volleyball. So... like, I don't know. I think there's a truth to that.
Totally.
And something else that I want to talk about, we're getting a little off course here, but me just rewatching some of the cutscenes from this game, I really applaud, and you were talking about Sora, that's right, about how he has a little bit of a temper in this game. The ending with Naminé and Sora is so, I love it so much because it is so what you wouldn't expect from a game like this. When Naminé is offering, like, do you want to remember me? Do you want to stay with me? Or do you want to go back to the way things were? Mm. And, like, this, the way that Sora says, make me the way I was. Just, and Naminé reacts, like, she has this little movement of, like, hurt. And I'm like, oh my god, this is so, like, if you were playing any other happy game, they would have found some way to, like, have a compromise, like, reconcile it in some way, have a happy ending, like, in both ways. But no, he says, make me the way I was, and she makes him the way he was.
He gets her, like, dude.
It's crazy. And, yeah, this game, it hits different, man. It hits fucking different.
And, you know, something...
it does a great job.
Something else I was thinking of with Chain of Memories is... I don't know if this makes... well, okay. Chain of Memories, I don't know if they, like, switched out some localizer staff, some translator. But the script specifically for Chain of Memories just feels so mature. Because, like, there are just certain words used and certain phrases used... and Chain of Memories and its story itself, it just, it feels like the, whoever was in charge, at least of the English localization, was like, not that, like, it's not for kids, because it's not, like, mature, like, rated, you know, inappropriate. But yeah, I mean, like you said, life doesn't always have, like, perfect endings where everybody gets what they want, like.
Yeah.
Poor Naminé, but and good for her for, like, sticking with what she promised. Like, she really said, if you want this, I will give it to you. And even though Sora said, you're right, that is what I want, she was, you know, you could tell she was, like, trying to hold back tears. She was like, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, and she goes on this whole little spiel about, like, yeah, that's what anyone would want, right? They want the people who actually care about them. And it's like,
poor fucking girl. He's literally in like rags, like.
Yeah.
Anyway. Back to we're reeling it in.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay. So something I think, like, so Chain of Memories is one of those games where overall people are like meh about it. But you're gonna have like those few people who are hardcore, die hard Chain of Memories fans who know everything about this game, all right? So they might have an issue with how, in the presentation, we kind of discussed how Destiny Islands might be from Sora's memory, even though Riku got to explore it. Mm-hmm. And at one point, when Riku is there, Zexion is like, you hated being an Islander. You opened the door and then Destiny Islands fell to darkness. Everything is your fault. So in that case, someone might be like, Destiny Islands is sampled from Riku because how else would Zexion know all of this? Mm-hmm. And I do think that, I believe I wrote arguably. Let me actually make sure that I did before I just start. Oh, shit. Maybe I didn't write arguably. Maybe I deleted
you said, that. You said so one could argue.
Oh, so one. Oh, thank God. Oh, thank God. I'm so reliable. I'm so consistent. But yes. So I think in that case, someone could argue that it was Riku's Destiny Islands. But, and I made sure. I like double checked. I triple checked. But Axel got this Destiny Islands information without ever interacting with or meeting Riku himself. So I still personally kind of stick to my guns that it's from Sora's memory, but I'm not gonna, like, die on this hill. Like, really, in the end, who give a shit? Chain of Memories is a self-contained game, but, like, whatever.
Yeah.
I think points could be made for either or. And it leads to the same result, you know? So that's another reason why I don't think it really matters.
I was gonna say, so, like, if... So the overall question is, like, where did it come from, right? So your question was, how would Zexion know all of this if it's sampled from Sora's memory, right?
Yeah.
So that would mean, like, if it is sampled from Sora's memory, this would be what Sora's opinions were?
I hope not. That would be fucking sad. Maybe it's... Sora might think it, because in Kingdom Hearts 1, Sora does see Riku standing, like, all creepily, like Blair Witch Project, and Riku's like, the door is opened, we have to step through, there's no looking back. So I wonder if maybe Sora does attribute it to Riku, but Sora doesn't strike me as the type of person to hold that against him. Yeah. So maybe he recognizes it in, like, a logical sense, but not negatively in an emotional sense. And maybe Zexion used that and, like, twisted it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, that's a good point. Riku was very gung-ho about wanting to go explore and leave the island and build the raft and all that. So,
yeah.
I don't know. That's just my thought.
Okay. So we're going to jump a bit. So we're talking about, you know, Riku's kind of memories in the world he walks through. And I noticed when Riku goes to Hollow Bastion, there's this voice that kind of talks to him. And we assumed at the beginning of the game that it was Ansem. And then we eventually learned that it was Diz who disguised himself as Ansem and tried to lead Riku to believe that he was Ansem, even though he's some other fucko entirely. So what I think is interesting is that during this, he says... The things you remember from your time at Maleficent's castle became a card. And that, I think, is so interesting because I think that's a hint. He doesn't say, my castle. Because Ansem would have been like, this is my fucking castle. Like, you're here. You're at my place. And so I never realized this, but I think that's like a hint that this person talking to Riku isn't Ansem at all and might not even... know that much about Ansem to call it Maleficent's castle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Very interesting. That is something that and you know, maybe it's not so much about him and his knowledge, but maybe in a meta sense, the game wrote it that way to not spoil us or something. I don't know. But either way, I thought that was interesting. And then another thing, we got an email from Kestrel. Hello, Kestrel.
Hello.
They wrote a lot, but we're going to take an excerpt of one of the things that they asked. And they wrote, gameplay-wise, the game uses cards as a mechanic and shows people actually holding them, etc., etc. But they're almost never spoken of again. Is there a deck of cards in Castle Oblivion just collecting dust now? Honestly, I want to say, like, yeah. Because one of the mechanics that I wanted to bring up, which is so stupid, and I don't even know if this is, like, really canon, but, like, who cares, is when you're walking through Castle Oblivion, there are Moogle rooms where there's a Moogle from Final Fantasy that just sells you cards, and you just buy the cards. And it's like, do the organizations mention it? No. Does the Figment of Ansem mention it? No. Does Mickey or this new guy Diz mention it? No. But, like, it's fun. And I think Castle also mentioned that they kind of have a hard time accepting when things are just gameplay mechanics. And I understand that, especially with Kingdom Hearts, because as you continue playing Kingdom Hearts, it just gets so intricate in how it explains certain things. Mm-hmm. So I can understand not being satisfied with certain explanations. Kingdom Hearts is one of those games that even I struggle with kind of, like, accepting something as just being, like, brushed away.
Yeah.
You know? But gosh darn it, that just is what Kingdom Hearts is. And if I ever get unsatisfied with it, then I go read something else, you know, that doesn't do that. But
yeah. And it's like, I don't remember my exact thread tying to this and the Moogle rooms and everything, but, like, Kingdom Hearts is really good about not doing the, like, tutorial stuff, like, as characters are talking. You know, like, Marluxia doesn't say to us, press the left stick to go forward and then hit X to swing your keyblade. They're pretty good about keeping all that stuff separate.
There is a tutorial where Marluxia is talking to Sora and he's like, your friends are your cards. You're right. He doesn't ever say, like, at least I don't remember him.
I don't
ever
think so.
Saying, like, press X.
Yeah.
You know?
Press the X button on your PlayStation controller to swing your weapon.
I love video games.
But, like, again, that's part of that question of, like, are these cards real? They're actually fighting with these damn cards and throwing them at each other. But, yeah, I don't know. Because, like, they're pretty good about keeping that stuff separate. And, like, I guess that would be evidence pointing to, yeah, these cards are real. They're part of the world. The characters are talking about them. And they're part of the story. But,
you know what is something so weird that happens in Chain of Memories? I didn't even write this down, but I feel like Kestrel would be annoyed with this too. So in the beginning of Chain of Memories, Donald and Goofy are no longer in their kind of Final Fantasy inspired outfits. They're, like, back to their Toontown outfits, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then at one point during the tutorial in Traverse Town, they show up again in their back to their Final Fantasy-esque clothes.
Yeah.
And they're like, our clothes have changed. Weird.
Yeah.
Like, but, like, you just, there's, it's like, sometimes, like, I'm sorry, it is what it is. There's no answer. Like, it's, you just gotta deal with it.
Yeah, they just do the magical girl transformation in between.
Oh my god.
The game.
If I had all the time in the world, I would animate that. I would.
All right. Well, I think that's pretty much all the stuff we wanted to cover for this episode. Mel, we're back.
What a good season return. I feel really good about this return.
Me too. I think it's a great first season two episode.
And we haven't even gotten to the characters. And I feel like that's really where all the meat and potatoes are. Like, I love this castle, but I'm so excited to talk about the characters.
Which, speaking of the characters, I hope I'm right in my assumption here. What's our next episode, Mel?
Our next episode is gonna be about the organization. And I was debating having that even be the first episode before this one, because it's hard talking about Chain of Memories when there's so many new characters and you're like, I'm sorry if you're new and I have to throw all these names at you, blah, 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 blah. But I wanted to get the castle just out of the way so that we understand how it worked. And now we're going to get to all these different new faces. They're all wearing the same damn outfit. They're all goths.
Yeah.
So we're going to walk you through, and hopefully by the end of that episode, you'll be able to hear us talk about characters and know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited about these characters.
Let's gucking foe.
Let's gucking foe. So if you have any questions about, do we want to say specifically who we're talking about? I guess.
Okay, so I want to say we're going to talk about both the organization from Sora and Riku's route at the same time. I don't think we're going to split it up. I don't think.
Okay.
Hopefully it won't be too long. If it's too long and we split it, then we'll just save your question for the week after.
So, if you have questions about anyone in a black coat, send them.
Including Mickey. At the end
Including
of the-
Mickey.
The end- no, not him, not him. I'm just joking.
But yeah, I need to do a call to action. I haven't done this in a while.
Oh, shit.
If you enjoyed the episode, be sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you're listening on YouTube or watching on YouTube, like and subscribe, tell your friends, share the link, all that good stuff. And yeah, that's it.
Email us at if you have any questions about the different organization members, who are they, what do they want, why are they so hot, why would you bake every single one of them, email
us. Smash or pass all of them.
Smash or pass the organization members. Send us at
Shedding Starlight. Just the name of the podcast at gmail.com.
I'm sick. SheddingStarlight@gmail.com. That's it.
That's it. I've said it. That's it like 3 times, but that's really it.
That's it. It's over.
All right. Thank you all for watching, and we'll see you in the starlight.